Good afternoon, everyone. The Labor, Industry, and Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on the House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ms. Doyle, will you please take the roll?
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Representative Detmer. Representative McDonald.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Poston, present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin. Representative Detmer. Representative Sundin. And we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from the March 2nd, 2021 meeting. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes, as well as a second copy that was correcting one mistake, I believe, is if that's correct. Representative Zhang, would you move the corrected minutes from the March 2nd, 2021 meeting?
We'll move with the corrections.
Thank you, Vice Chair Zhang. Any comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption say aye.
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 Aye. We'll say nay. Motion carries. The minutes are adopted. Members, first bill on the agenda today is House File 641 from Representative Raleigh. Representative Raleigh, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. I am moving House File 641.
Representative Raleigh moves that House File be 641 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Raleigh, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate it. Members, House File 641 is a bipartisan bill. It's good for veterans, it's good for business, and it's good for Minnesota. Veterans who've suffered a service-connected disability face the dual challenge of reintegrating back into the civilian world, as well as having to work through the challenges that come with their injuries. The bill offers up a tax credit of up to $3,000 to an employer who hires a disabled veteran, or up to $1,500 in tax credits for hiring an unemployed veteran. The bill is tied to the wages that will be paid, and it offers a clear path on how the credit will be applied. It also has a thoughtful provision to ensure that the rules on how the bill applies are clear and also addresses the issue of nepotism. This bill offers an incentive to businesses to reach out to those members of our community who put their lives on the line and came back from their service differently abled. It offers a tax incentive that will put more Minnesotans back to work and help our businesses honor those who have served our country. This bill is very personal to me. I served for nearly 8 years on active duty in the United States Army, and I am also a service-connected disabled veteran myself. My sisters and brothers in uniform each raised their right hand and swore an oath of service to give their everything to this country. This bill gives us an opportunity to honor their commitment and to help them with the dignity that comes from work now that they're back here in Minnesota. There are programs that help veterans and jobs. This bill will help companies find those veterans. I have requested a fiscal note. It's not been completed yet. And at this time, I would like to call on nonpartisan staff to explain this bill.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Ms. Roberts or whoever from nonpartisan staff is ready to explain it. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Williams, please proceed.
Chair Eklund and members, my name is Sean Williams from House Research Department. I staff the Tax Committee. I think Representative Raleigh provided a pretty good overview of the bill. The bill establishes an employer-side tax credit for hiring either disabled or unemployed veterans. The credit is set at about 10% at 10% of wages paid to either an unemployed or disabled veteran. The limit for the credit is $3,000 for hiring a disabled veteran and up to $1,500 for hiring an unemployed veteran. And an employer couldn't claim the credit for an unemployed or a disabled veteran for the same individual in the same tax year. And so for pass-through entities, the credit would pass through pro rata to the owners or partners in the partnership or S corporation or LLC, sort of depending. That's a pretty typical provision for tax credits on the employer side. And I'm happy to answer any questions if members have them.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. If you could stick around, we've got one testifier, and then we'll take members' questions. Representative Raleigh, are you ready for your testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would call on Mr. Trent Dilks to share his testimony, Mr. Chair.
Trent Dilks, Executive Director, Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. Mr. Dilks, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, I'm Trent Dilks, Executive Director for the DAV of Minnesota. I'm happy to be back in front of this committee again. House File 641. I remember I was coming back from my first tour. I was over in Iraq, and I thought maybe I wanted to go to work. And so I went to the employment office, and the deed rep said, "Well, what'd you do overseas?" Said, "Well, I was a machine gunner." He laughed and said, "Well, we don't have much call for that around here," and printed off every $12 non-direct hire job within about a 30-mile radius. It kind of started my passion for finding ways that we can help veterans with employment and finding gainful employment, and that is something that the Disabled American Veterans nationally has focused on. Throughout that process, we have found that tax credits can be a beneficial tool to get potential employers to the table. Maybe you lure them in with the tax credits and some of the other incentives, and then you're able to really express the value that veterans with disabilities can bring to a company, can bring to an area, how some of the skills that they learned transfer from military service to the civilian world. To put it in perspective, the DAV put out a report in conjunction with Syracuse University Institute for Veterans. 57% of disabled veterans fear hiring discrimination should it be found out that they had a service-connected disability. And 71% of service-connected veterans, I have no intention of letting their potential or current employers know that they have a service-connected disability. Instead of all of the assets that a veteran and a veteran with a disability can bring to a company, it's clear in the veteran community through these research results that it's being seen as a possible hindrance or barrier to companies wanting to bring in veterans. Again, a tax credit is something that we know has been used to great benefit in other states. I did a quick look at our neighbors, and Wisconsin has an up to $4,000 disabled veteran tax credit. Iowa, $4,800 disabled veteran tax credit. And if you go a little further out, New York actually has a $15,000 disabled veteran tax credit. So maybe we can get there next session. But I think Representative Raleigh's bill is an excellent start. The Disabled American Veterans, representing our 19,000 members, fully supports this. I can also relay the support of the Commander's Task Force, representing over 100,000 combined members in the 9 congressionally chartered organizations, unanimously supports this bill. And I also got word that the United Veterans Legislative Council wanted me to pass along their full support for this bill. It's been around for a few years, and the veteran community would really like to see this be the year that we add this to our toolkit and start trying to help some more veterans and homeless veterans and disabled veterans find gainful employment. Thank you again, Representative Raleigh, and thank you, Chair Eklund, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Dilks. I appreciate your testimony. Please stick around in case there's any questions. Member questions or comments? Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Raleigh, and also thank you, Mr. Dilks, for coming and being part of this committee again. I know you've been part of a lot of different pieces of legislation that has come across this committee. You mentioned a few other states in the surrounding area that have this type of tax credit. How many states are there that actually have gone through this type of process and have now this type of tax credit for employers?
Representative Raleigh or Mr. Dilks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our research shows that we have 15 other states are offering this type of a credit, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know this bill has been around, I think, for maybe 6 years. I know I carried it a few years back, and it's something that we've been working on. And as Mr. Dilks has indicated, that the Commander's Task Force, the nine different chartered veterans organizations in the state also supports this. So hopefully we can get this through this year and do something for our disabled veterans. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raleigh, I have a question for you regarding one of the provisions in the bill that would prohibit hiring a relative that would qualify for this tax credit. So although I see the intent of that, but if a veteran is a veteran and has an opportunity to work for a relative's business, wouldn't that be good to have that business and employer hire that relative and still be able to take advantage of the tax credit?
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McDonald. You know, taking a look at that, the intent is to make sure that we're not engaging in nepotism, and there's two aspects to it, Representative McDonald. The first aspect is we wanted to make sure that a veteran that was currently on the employment rolls of an employer could not be removed and then hired back in order to create this environment of a tax credit. The second one was we didn't want to create either the illusion or the feeling of nepotism where hiring a relative just to get them on the rolls in order to take care of the tax credit. A relative would have some advantages to be able to be employed by the employer, and that is incentive enough because they're a family member, and offering this type of a credit would be in addition to that. And it does say that we do have a clause in there that they can't be hired or they can't get the tax credit if they own more than 50% of the business. So if it is a distant relative, if it is somebody who is not does not have a material stake in that company, they could qualify. We're making sure that somebody who owns the company, meaning that they've got a material stake in it, would not qualify. Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Raleigh. I appreciate the explanation. It's a great bill, and you have my full 110% support.
Any other member questions or comments? Well, seeing none, I'll add one comment. Representative Raleigh, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I would certainly hope that you were successful in taxes on this. We'll see how that goes at the next committee. And I got to remind members that when the Commander's Task Force comes out in favor of some bills, that we expect the equal amount of effort put behind all those bills. Representative Raleigh, would you like to remove your motion and provide any other closing comments?
Mr. Chair, I do renew my motion, and I want to thank the chair and members, specifically Representative Detmer and Representative Berg, who are co-signers in our committee on this bill. As representatives, we serve the people of our communities and our state. This bill gives us an opportunity to come together and honor our veterans while at the same time helping our business community. And isn't that why we're here? I'd ask for your support on this bill, support of our veterans, and support of our business community. I want to thank each of you for your time and your consideration, and I do ask for a yes vote. Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh renews his motion that House File 641 be referred to the Taxes Committee on Taxes. Ms. Doyle, will you please take the roll?
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Yes.
Excellent.
Zhang, aye. Donald. Representative Detmer.
Aye.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald.
Aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
Yes.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson.
Oh, I apologize. My hand must have went up. I didn't mean to yet.
Representative Edelson, we're in the middle of the vote right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I apologize. Yes.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin. Representative Sundin. There are 12 ayes.
With 12 ayes and zero nays, the motion is approved and the bill is on its way to taxes. Members, we had to pull one bill today, House File 41, because the fiscal note was not ready. House File 800, Representative Wolgemont, is presenting in another committee. My understanding, he will be here shortly, so we are just going to hang out here for a few minutes and wait for Representative Raleigh. All right, Representative Raleigh, you just got done, Representative Raleigh. I apologize. Representative Wolgemont.
Mr. Chair, since you called my name, may I make a comment?
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, I have been told that it is the tradition of the House that when a freshman makes their first presentation of a bill, that treats will be provided. Unfortunately, we're not all here together, but at my desk tomorrow, office 345, I will have donuts for everyone if they choose to come up.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Raleigh. I do miss the treats, but that's a very kind offer. Thank you. And members, I apologize for the delay, but sometimes these things happen, especially in the strange new world of Zoom that we're living in. So we'll hang out here for a few minutes and wait for Representative Wolgemont. Members, on advice from my committee administrator, who always gives me good advice, we'll wait here. We're waiting for Representative Wolgemont, but we can start I can start describing his bill a little bit. Part of it, and I don't want
to. Mr. Chair, if you're going to do that, then we should put the bill in front of us. So you would have to make the motion anyway. So I would suggest making the motion to get it in front of us while you do the description.
Thank you, Mr. Reitz. As always, good advice to keep a good thing to keep the chair on track. House File 800 is from Representative Wolgemont. I will move that the House File 800 be referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. So, members, this bill is coming forward from the folks that work in and around our processing plants, meat processing plants and such. We saw last year with the pandemic that the tremendous amount of pressure that was put on the meat processing plants, first off, the number of animals that had to be moved to the processing plants in extraordinary numbers, just simply because of the pandemic and some of the things that were surrounding it. And then we also saw, and I don't know how many members went on the tour when we had our mini session down in Winona. A lot of the folks on the committee now weren't a part of that, but we did go down and see that. And I was fortunate enough to be able to tour the processing plant in Hormel. And Hormel does a fine job as protecting their workers, making sure that they're safe and all that sort of thing. But one thing I noticed in hindsight on that is how close together these production workers are. And in this day and age of social distancing and virus transmission and that sort of thing, it's a real concern that we have to take into account with the people that are providing the beef, pork, and poultry for our tables. So when some of the advocates brought this bill forward and started talking about it, and I was certainly glad to see Representative Wolgamont take that, because he does have processing facilities in and around his district. So I'm understanding that he knows a lot of these concerns. So there's several things that this bill will take in. There'll be a workers' rights coordinator. Workers will be able to refuse to work under dangerous conditions, and that will be discussed further on in the bill. There's some reference to unemployment insurance in and around working in dangerous meatpacking conditions. There's some enforcement and compliance issues that will be talked about when Representative Wolgamont gets here. There's some language in there that addresses retaliation against employees and whistleblowers. And then myself being a former production worker, this one is what really hits home to me, because several of my coworkers in the paper industry came down with carpal tunnel and other repetitive motion injuries. So there's some stuff that will establish meatpacker chronic injuries and workplace safety. And I'm sure you guys are reading off the same thing that I am, so you know if it came out in our meeting materials today. And then employers must provide written notice to employees of their rights under the act in language that they understand at least, and this has to be provided at least annually. So Mr. Reese, I don't know if we need to start calling testifiers or if we hang out here a few more minutes for Representative Wolgamont, but that's kind of a brief overview of what we'll be talking about when Representative Wolgamont gets here.
Mr. Chair, I suggest we maybe give him about 2 to 3 more minutes, because I do think he will also want to discuss the author's amendment, and I do believe some of the testimony will be in regards to the bill as amended, so we'll just wait. I am in conversation with both him and the staff that he is in the committee with, and so they're working as fast as they can to get him over, Mr. Chair.
I thank you, members. I appreciate your indulgence, and this is the first time today I forgot to unmute myself when I'm supposed to be talking. So we'll hang out here for a few minutes, members, and as soon as Representative Wolgamont gets here, we'll proceed. Thank you. Committee members, Representative Wogemeyer is still tied up in higher ed. So, Ms. James, if you could walk us through the amendment, and then we can talk about that, since I'll be the one that'll have to move the amendment anyway.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. Let me just pull up the amendment. All right. Mr. Chair and members, the A3 amendment modifies the definition of the meat processing worker to clarify that it's someone who works directly in contact with the raw meat packing products. It also indicates that the commissioner of deed can enforce the section that's related to unemployment, and also gives Dolly compliance authority. The remainder of the amendment adds appropriations. I believe that is everything.
Thank you, Ms. James. Members, any questions to the content of the amendment? I will move adoption of the A3 amendment for House File 800 to get the bill in the shape that Representative Wogemeyer wants it. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Members, we will start with the testifiers, and then we'll bring in Representative Wogemeyer when he gets here. I'll call off the first three in order like we've had have done in the past. Testifiers, you are to talk about 2 to 3 minutes. I will let you know if you're getting too long. The first three up would be Matt Utek, Rich Morgan, and Tamara Nelson. Matt Utek, UFCW Local 663 President. Mr. Utek, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Matt Utek, and I am president of UFCW Local 663. And I'd like to say, excuse me first, but good afternoon, Chairman Eklund, and members of the Labor and Industry, Veterans and Military Affairs Policy Committee. I'm here today on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 663. As I've said, my name is Matt Utek, and I am president of UFCW Local 663. I represent more than 13,200 hardworking essential retail, meatpacking and processing, food preparation and manufacturing, healthcare and other workers in Minnesota and Iowa. We represent workers in Worthington and across the state who are on the front lines of this pandemic and continue to work together to keep Minnesota's families fed. Meatpacking is one of the most dangerous industries for workers out there today. Health and safety is constantly brought up as one of the most important issues facing meat and poultry workers in Minnesota. Last year, COVID-19 outbreaks in Worthington wreaked havoc in the pork plant where our union members work. These essential Tier 1 workers in Worthington, along with all meatpacking and poultry workers throughout the state, have put their lives on the line and exposed themselves and their families to additional risks in order to keep Minnesota families fed. The Minnesota Safe Workplaces and Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act would provide comprehensive workplace health and safety protections and ensure workers have access to benefits and training needed to work safely as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. The state must do better for these workers, and this legislation is a step in the right direction. This legislation will also address needs far beyond the pandemic. Health and safety was a constant issue in meatpacking before the onset of the pandemic. That's why we've joined together with Representative Wogemeyer, UFCW Local 9 President Rich Morgan, and our community partners to support this legislation to improve the lives of all meatpacking and poultry processing workers throughout the state of Minnesota. You'll hear testimony today from workers in meatpacking and organizers who work with poultry processing workers. They will talk about the risks that they face in the industry before the pandemic and during this health crisis. They know their experiences the best because they have lived them. All meatpacking and poultry processing workers deserve to be healthy and safe in the workplace. Please pass file 800, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Utek. Please stick around in case there's members' questions when we're finished. Next up is Rich Morgan, UFCW Local 9 President. Mr. Morgan, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Rich Morgan, President of Local 9, Austin, Minnesota. Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund and members of the committee. I'm here today on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 9 in Austin. The workers in Austin are lucky. They have employers who've been doing the right thing, unlike some of the other bad actors out there. Back in 2007, Local 9, along with Worthington Local, which has since merged with 663, along with Local 6 in Albert Lea and 1189 in South St. Paul, we all partnered up and introduced legislation which was passed. It was the Meatpacking Workers' Bill of Rights. At that time, we knew there was room for improvement, but during the onset of COVID, the Minnesota Department of Labor used that legislation to help make recommendations on how to combat this virus at our plants. That prompted Local 663 and Local 9, along with the assistance from the International and countless other groups, move for legislation for safety and health for all processing and poultry workers across the state. At that time, I started hearing from workers and others and received phone calls about conditions in some of the processing facilities that were, for a lack of better words, in a bad way. The stories reminded me of a book, The Jungle. Some of the employers were not supplying PPE. Some folks had to choose to either go to work, knowing their roommates, spouses, or children had COVID, or to stay home and not receive any pay for 2 weeks to keep their coworkers safe. What a choice. In fact, I received a call from an employer who couldn't get masks for their employees. I used my contacts to get them supplies and masks to keep their workers safe. This is 2021, not 1921. Simply common sense, proactive legislation that would not and should not be a party issue. There's Democrats, there's Republicans in both of those plants, or in all the plants. This is a Minnesota workers' issue, and these workers are counting on you to do the right thing. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Please stick around in case there's questions. Next up is Tamara Nelson, Executive Director, Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. Ms. Nelson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. Tamara Nelson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. Chair Eklund and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. AgriGrowth is a nonprofit, nonpartisan member organization that represents agriculture and food from farmer to Fortune 500. Our members are diverse in size, structure, and in the products and services they offer. They play a critical role in bringing Minnesota products to local markets and to the world, as has been mentioned. As currently written, our industry has serious concerns about this bill. From the first weeks of the pandemic, our members' words and actions clearly demonstrated their number one priority, the safety, health, and well-being of their employees. Pre-pandemic, food and worker safety measures in some cases already included masks, face shields, goggles, gloves, and protective clothing. During the pandemic, our members took additional immediate steps to expand and adjust their measures according to state and federal guidelines from a half a dozen agencies. Our members' actions were proactive, innovative, and transparent to their workers and to the public. The agri-food sector in Minnesota is our second largest economic driver, and our industry's response to COVID-19 was critical as various food outlets changed for millions of consumers. Our members excelled at adapting and innovating to keep employees safe while continuing to feed consumers here and around the globe. AgriGrowth strongly advocates right now that attention be critically given to the prioritization of these employees in the vaccination process. We look forward to working with lawmakers to promote a safe and vibrant agri-food industry. Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Please stick around if there's any questions. Next three on the list are Antonio Jimenez, Yolanda Martinez, and if I really blow this, I apologize, Ayayu Bejica. You are the next three on the list, and I'll use Representative Sundin's line on this. When we get election certificates, we're allowed to butcher names. That's just part of the thing. But anyway, Antonio Jimenez, UFCW Local 663. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Antonio Jimenez. Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund and members of the labor and industry, veterans and military affairs policies community. I am a union member of the Union Food and Commercial Workers Local 663. My name is Antonio Jimenez, and I have been working in JVS Work Plan in Worthington, Minnesota for 26 years, and I have been a union member that long. In the spring of 2020, a COVID outbreak throughout my plant, and I was one of the workers who got sick. I was out of work for months to recover, worry the whole time about passing the infection to my children, family, and friends. My union provided me with information and resources that allowed me to take advantage of short-term disability. Most people I know have at least a couple friends who got COVID in my plant. More than 50% of the workers in my plant got COVID, and it was devastating. Whole things have improved. COVID is still here in our community, and I is still here for me. Personally, I is still struggling with the effects, after effects, lingering symptoms, fatigue, and I still don't feel full back to normal nearly a year later. And I still worry for my coworkers and for my family, and I worry about other meatpacking workers throughout the industry that do not have a union, then stand for them. I know the work we do is important, but I don't want anyone else to go through what I went through. We've been struggling through all the hardest part of the pandemic, and I still live in fear today. Minnesota cannot afford to go backward. That is why we need to our leaders to prioritize meatpacking workers and health and safety for all Minnesota meatpackers and poultry processors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jimenez, for your testimony. Please stick around in case there's any member questions. Next up is Yolanda Martinez from UFC Local 663. Ms. Martinez, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sorry about that. Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund and members of the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Policy Committee. I am a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 663. My name is Yolanda Martinez, excuse me, and I've worked at JBS for 31 years and have been a union member for 31 years. I work in the CryoVac department at the plant, and the CryoVac means that I work with the machines that seal the pork products in the plastic. The biggest safety concern for me is the fast line speeds at the plant. We are expected to do quality work, and we hold ourselves to that high quality. The reality is that sometimes it is just not as good as you want it to be because the line is too fast. Another thing that happens at work is that the number of people assigned to the job is reduced, yet the line speeds remain the same. Say four people are assigned to do the job, and it is reduced to three or even two people. Now there's pressure to do the same amount of work that a four-person team would do. Many times people get injured when this happens. And people do not want to go see the nurse because of the shame that they feel about not being able to do the job. Mind you, that four people used to do. Well, we know that this is only really hurting themselves. The mindset is that people don't want to feel like a bother, so they don't say anything. It's just a vicious cycle. Please support House File 800 that elevates the health and safety for myself and my coworkers at JBS in Worthington. I'm excited about Section 4 of the bill that establishes a safe worker program committee and training. It will be able to address some of the concerns that I have brought forward today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Please stick around in case there's questions. Next up is Ayayu Bejika. And please pronounce your name for me when you introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, you did a good job, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ayayu Bejika. Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund, member of Labor, Industry, Veteran, and Military Affairs Policy Committee. I am a union member, United Food Commercial, a worker local union 663. My name is Ayayu Bejika. I work for Meatpacking for 29 years. And I have been a union member for this long. I work for 6 years in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is a neighboring state. 23 years now at GBS, Portland in Worthington, Minnesota. I'm also a community leader and community leader for the Oromo people in Worthington and the Worthington area, surrounding area. I am proud to be rest my family working meat packing plant Midwest. I rest 6 children and union meat packing salary. I, in fact, 2 of them are in Air Force. I am working in union store and JBS, means I listed to take with my co-worker and work with them to make sure the union contact is enforced. I work a second shift. Meeting park is a dangerous line work. The issues I hear come up again and again from my co-workers, including knife, safety, fast line speed, preventative stress injuries from a job. Meat parking plants might try to keep safety first for us, but in fact, we are working so fast, keeping with production goals to improve, to be 100% safe on time. For example, the knife we used cut in the processing pork are very sharp because the work is fast. Sometimes knife can slip from your hand. There is type of knife called weather knife, is electric wire. Another type of common injuries that is seen from knife that is working finger lock from using the basic electric knife, and a shift oftentimes is in fingers get locked, cannot bend, or workers have to suck their hand on hot water, then moved again. Meat packing hard work, not and for everybody's cut out of job, but we can do together improve in health and safety for us and the future workers, industry together, passing House File 800. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm kind of nervous. Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bejika. You did a fine job. Don't worry about that. Please stick around in case there's any questions from members. The next three will be Claudia Ambrose, Renee Brackey, and Rod Ricks. Ms. Ambrose, UFCW Local 9, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the labor industry. My name is Claudia Ambrose. I've been living in Austin, Minnesota for the past 16 years. And for these 16 years, I've also worked for Quality Pork Processors. I'm a union representative, but also a safety committee member. For many years, and during this time, I have seen accidents, which are some are small, like cuts, bruises, or muscle pains. Other ones are bad, like hogs falling down and hitting employees. But we had a member that was working on the rework center, and he got the scanner too close to him and ended up skinning part of his chest and belly. Every time something like this happens, we as a safety committee, we get to go out on the floor and do an investigation and look for ideas to prevent this from happening again. We have meetings twice a month. After we're done with our safety meetings, we go to the floor and do safety walks, and we get to talk to the people. If they have a concern towards safety, they get to talk to us and address their concerns. One thing that does get me is that on Wednesdays, when we have orientation with our new hires, and you hear all kinds of stories from other places they have worked, and they said that they got fired within the first weeks because they went to medical too much complaining about pain. Or someone gets hurt, they get fired. They don't understand that we're not used to many of these jobs, and instead of moving us around or working with us, we get to be let go because we cannot perform a job that they put us in. We have the right to work in a safe environment, and having a safety committee is even better. There are more people that take safety very serious, but yet there's a lot of companies that don't care about that. Here are quality report processors for all new hires starting, and they're done with their training. They still have to go 2 more weeks to orientation, where they do let them do exercises and stretching, and they also tell them to keep doing them at home so their body can get used to those same repetitive motions. With this COVID-19 going on right now, we had a lot of people quit, and a lot of lines in the company got to be shut down. They moved those people to the main line so the company would keep on running, but they also let the speed way slower for employees to keep up with the line and for them not to get hurt. We want our employees to go home the same way with their families, the same way they came to work. I wish all companies within the poultry and meatpacking plants would have a safety committee, but it's how they say, sometimes life is not fair, but we can be. I just want to thank you, Chairman Eklund, and members of the labor industry. Have a safe and wonderful day.
Thank you, Ms. Ambrose. Please stick around for questions. Next up is Renee Brackey, UFCW Local 9. Ms. Brackey, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Chairman Eckert and the host committee. My name is Renee Brackey. I live in Albert Lea, Minnesota. I have lived in Minnesota for 59 years. I've worked at Hormel Processing for 37 years here in March. I've been on the safety committee for 37 years, 35 we've had our committee in the Hormel plant. And as I was being on this committee, our new employees have came in and told us stories that are just unbelievable for me because our company is not like that. I had a new employee tell me that they couldn't go to the bathroom, that they actually had to wear Depends. That's wrong. In Minnesota, we don't do that. Also, as a worker, being on a floor worker, and I still work on the floor, a pallet jack. To have a pallet jack, they're just amazed that you don't have to palletize on the floor, that it moves around, which is ergonomically, you're not getting back injuries, you're going home feeling better than if you were doing a job that way. Another story that I was told was about just having work stands for height. We have 7-foot people, I'm 5'4", so I'm short. So I need a stand to do some of these jobs. To bring your product to the body instead of away from the body helps ergonomically, so we go home and we're not always hurting. I've been doing this type of work for a long time. Our safety and ergo is very important to every worker on our floors. I can't imagine working for a company that wouldn't put your worker first. That's why Minnesota needs this law so bad. I just wish that every worker could experience what I have experienced in the place that I work at. Lockout tagout is one of my favorites, and I've been on the safety committee for a long time. That is one of my favorites because if you're locking stuff down and you're using tools and not putting your hands inside equipment, you're not going to lose a hand. You're not going to lose an arm. You're not going to get stuck in those machines. That is one of my favorite laws. I think this law could help us even be better, and I wish everyone in the United States and globally that could have that. I want to thank you for your time, and willingly, hopefully, this thing can pass so everybody can enjoy their jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brackey, for your testimony. Please stick around in case there's questions. Next up is Rod Ricks, UFCW Local 9. Mr. Ricks, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Uckland and members of the House. My name is Rodney Ricks. I work for Hormel Foods in Austin, Minnesota. I've worked there for 26 years, and I've been in this type of work for 46 years. I am also the chairman of the Safety Committee. We have a very proactive and preventative safety committee. Our mission is to identify, control, and eliminate workplace safety and health issues. The most important thing we do is to educate the workers through training. By doing this, we empower the workers to speak up. That is why this bill is so important. It outlines the right to a safe workplace, something every worker should have in Minnesota. Members of the House, when you hear OSHA, what do you think? It is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. When the packing house worker hears OSHA, we think a worker has been hurt badly, possibly lost a limb, maimed, or even killed on the job. That worker won't be going home the same way they started their day, or going home at all. No family needs to hear this news. Companies should be thankful for workers that care about their safety and those around them. Our workforce is growing smaller. There are not as many people that want to work in these kinds of jobs. They are cold, fast, and dangerous. Without proper training and guidelines, you can be hurt very easily. This bill will help get people to these jobs safely so they can provide for their families. This industry needs this bill. It is the foundation for the future of safety and health in the meatpacking industry. This bill will allow Minnesotans to have a voice when it comes to their health and safety in the workplace. As a safety committee member, I hear a lot of stories from new workers that have past experiences from other facilities. Most of those stories are ones that shouldn't have to be told, but are most certainly stories that must be heard. Workers are afraid to speak up. They are intimidated by these large companies. This bill gives the workers the voice they need to the rights of a safe workplace. Workers have been fired for experiencing pain or getting hurt on the job. These are not reasons for termination. These are some of the reasons this bill is so important for the Minnesota workforce. I'd like to share an experience of mine with you. I worked for a beef plant here in the Midwest. The carcasses of beef would come down on a rail where they would be split into sides. The saw used by the worker to split the carcasses is on a bungee or assist cables, which allows the worker some ease of operation. This worker had been telling his supervisor there was something wrong with his saw. It felt loose, the cables didn't feel right. He had been reporting this for several days. Then one particular day, the saw fell, cutting his leg wide open. This was the most graphic thing I have seen in my career. This was a life-changing injury, not only for the worker, but for his family and everyone around him. That is why we need this bill. It is a life-changing bill for every Minnesotan in the meatpacking and poultry industry. This bill will change lives for the better. Thank you, Chairman Eklund and members of the House, for your time and support.
Thank you, Mr. Ricks. Next three, the testifiers are Mohammed Goni, Maria Elena Gutierrez, and Adiam G. Mohammed, Mr. Goni, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund, members of the Labor Industry Veterans and Military Affairs Policy Committee. My name is Mohammed Goni, and I'm an organizer with Greater Minnesota Worker Center. Since our creation in 2013, Greater Minnesota Worker Center has led an active campaign to advocate and empower workers in central Minnesota. Last May, during the height of the pandemic, I stepped in to help meatpacking workers in Pilgrim's Pride in Cold Spring. Workers were testing positive in a high rate and were unable to take time off to quarantine or provided proper PPE in the plant. The message from the company to these workers was to get to work or leave. The consequences for leaving, the workers were told they will no longer be employed at Pilgrim's Pride and therefore no longer able to provide for themselves and for their families. I continued to work with meat packing workers throughout the central Minnesota area for the rest of the summer. We organize weekly meetings with the Attorney General's office to help us file and work within the state OSHA system. The lack of access to paid sick leave for workers in this industry has resulted in the health outcomes we see in the state today. So many workers have lost weight, spread the virus among their co-workers, their communities, and their families as a result. Meat and poultry packing workers deserve to have a paid sick leave. As you all know, the safety issues facing these workers existed before the pandemic. A common injury I have seen among workers resulted from consistent use of pallet jack. This can lead to a different types of muscle injuries that can cause workers to seek medical attention. Meat and poultry packing workers deserve to have a voice in their own health and safety in the workplace. I am in support of House File 800 today because this legislation will give workers access to paid sick leave and voice to address their own health and safety on the job. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Please pass HF 800 today. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Goni. Please stick around. Next up is Maria Elena Gutierrez. Ms. Gutierrez, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Maylena Gutierrez. I am an organizer and Fey Justicia in Central Minnesota. And I have received the phone calls because we have a hotline, and I received the calls of the workers in our area. So I have a testimony from one of the workers that were not able to come today because she started to work today. But I want to say that we as a Faith and Justice, we support HF 800 because it will monitor the meat packaging and the workers will save and because many of them are afraid to talk, then this bill will help. So I wanna read the testimony from one of the workers. So it says, I have the permission to read her testimony and then I will do it. So my name is Juana. I work at the Pilgrim's Pride Company in Cold Spring for a year and 4 months. Thanks be to God. Since the pandemic began a year ago, here in Pilgrim's, there were many cases in the company. They hid from us how many were infected of the plant. According to them, it was confidential information and there were many irregularities. A female coworker that I accompanied to the infirmary because she felt very bad at Pilgrim's nurse station, they told her that it was her menopause, and that is why she felt those symptoms. After we started reporting to the authorities, they started cleaning, according to them, deep cleaning. But for a few months now, they stopped cleaning and it is as before. The bathrooms are always dirty. We punch in out all the groups at the same time. Too many of us are pushing up against each other in order to punch in out of the time at the same time. And we all go for breaks again at the same time. We all pile on top of each other to use the microwaves so we can heat our food online. And time. We went back to the same of all beings in groups together, and now the contagion of COVID has returned to the company, and nobody is paying attention to what is happening at the Pilgrim's Company. On the line where I work, some weeks ago, I tested positive for COVID, and the next day, another worker from the same line got the contagious too. The company is telling us 10 days have passed since the day of the test. You must present at work tomorrow, even though I tell them I still don't feel well. I have a child at school, and the school put him in quarantine. I told Pilgrim's Pride that I don't have babysitting. The company is not interested of the workers. The workers are in good health, and they require us to return to work right away. I earn $660 a week, and Pilgrims only paid me $295 for 4 weeks. And that is what they have done for other workers who have also been sick. Others were not paid any salary during their illness. That is not fair because we work directly for Pilgrim's Pride and they do not take care of the workers. I am a single mother, and the $295 they send me for 4 weeks is not enough to pay my expenses. I was not able to pay my rent last month, and very likely not this month. I ask with all my heart that my testimony be heard. I live in the hands of people who are interested in the health and well-being of the Hispanic workers. I live first thanking you for your attention and waiting for your prompt reply. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gutierrez. Please stick around. The last testifier is Eddie M.G. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Audium Gebremedhin, and good afternoon, Chairman Eklund and members of the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Policy Committee. My name is Audium, and I am a high school student in Worthington, Minnesota, and a student organizer with Making a Change in Unidos, Minnesota. My father works at JBS in Worthington, and he's worked there for over 20 years. I'm not here to only testify on behalf of my father, but on behalf of all the other students whose parents work at the plant. Our parents fuel the economy in Worthington, and I know that there are other families like my own who work at plants like JBS and also have a large impact in their communities. As the main breadwinner in my home, my dad has had to work double shifts to provide us with the basic needs like food and a roof over our heads. When COVID hit the state, my father and his coworkers were the first to get the virus. It was hard to see him decide whether to work extra hours or not. The decision of making ends meet or thinking about the health of his family. COVID has taught us all many things, but it has taught the state of Minnesota and the nation that my dad and many others are essential to the nation. And because JBS does work abroad, they're essential to the world. And because of this, they deserve to walk in and out of work knowing they're safe, knowing that the state and companies value their lives over money. He deserves to get paid sick leave if anything should ever happen. He deserves to have a voice in the workplace regarding his health and safety, because the well-being of my father should not only be important to me and my family, but to the company, city, and state. I'm here on behalf of my father and other mothers and fathers like him, and I'm asking on behalf of the children whose parents work in places like JBS to pass House File 800 today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. I'll get your name wrong. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, members, Representative Wolgamon is here, so we're going to let him do a walk through the bill quickly, and then we'll take members' questions. Representative Wolgamon, we have moved the bill and moved the A3 amendment, so the floor is yours to walk us through the bill. Representative Wolgamon.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, members, and especially thank you to the testifiers. Again, I'm Representative Dan Wolgamon, and I'm proud to present House File 800, the Minnesota Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act. Mr. Chair, I'm bringing this bill forward because You know, a lot of these stories that you've heard today, these gut-wrenching, unacceptable stories that have come from my constituents and people from all throughout the state about unsafe working conditions at meat and poultry processing plants. This is unacceptable. We need to make sure that these stories that we've heard today never happen again here in our state. So that's why I'm authoring this legislation. It provides comprehensive workplace health and safety protections. It will ensure that workers have access to the benefits and training that they need to work safely during this pandemic. But this isn't just about COVID. We need to make sure that workers have safe working places through this pandemic and beyond. Additionally, Mr. Chair and members, this bill establishes the position of a workers' rights coordinator, which will be housed within the Department of Labor and Industry, who will be dedicated to enforcement and compliance of these safety and training elements of this bill. Mr. Chair, these workers have been forced to sacrifice their physical health and their financial health and that of their families to keep our constituents fed. No Minnesotan should have to choose between earning income for their family or working in unsafe conditions. That's why I'm putting this bill forward. That's why I'm asking for your support. And with that, Mr. Chair, my testifiers and I will be more than happy to take any member questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. First question is Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Just trying to get some paperwork here. Just have a question for Representative Wolgamont regarding in your amendment, if you will. I'll just have a couple notes here. So in your amendment, Representative Wolgamont, you have that deed will enforce unemployment insurance, and it already falls under deed. So I'm just wondering why you have that as a standalone in your bill.
Representative Wolgamont.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Again, this was language that got brought to us from the Department of Labor and Industry just to clarify it. So I think we do have someone from DALI. So if they would care to further explain why this language was necessary, I think this would be a good time for them to come on and provide that answer for Representative McDonald.
We have somebody from Department of Labor and Industry or nonpartisan staff that could explain this. I don't see anybody from Department of Labor and Industry. Ms. James, can you maybe address that?
Chair Eklund, this is Nicole Blissenbach from the Department of Labor and Industry.
Blissenbach, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Was the specific question about the unemployment insurance provisions?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it was. Since unemployment insurance already falls under deed in Representative Wolgamont's amendment, he has it a kind of a standalone within his bill. So it is duplicative, which government seems to do. Wondering why that is necessary. Maybe there's a rational reason, and that's fine.
Ms. Blissenbach.
Yes, Chair Eklund, members of the committee. When the bill was first introduced and we were in the process of doing the fiscal note, we did note that the initial enforcement authority for all the provisions of the bill was with the Department of Labor and Industry, including the provisions that related to unemployment. We provided feedback that we would not be able to enforce the provisions that provided for unemployment benefits under certain conditions that are different than the current unemployment laws, and provided the feedback that that would be under deeds authority rather than Department of Labor and Industries authority.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under federal law, unemployment insurance has to be its own entity. So in Representative Wolgamont's bill, adding that, would that jeopardize that at all?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Chair Eklund, members of the committee, I am not knowledgeable in the unemployment arena as that falls under deeds authority, so I can't answer your question.
Ms. James, do you have anything that you could add to that from nonpartisan staff?
Mr. Chair and members, so unemployment is a state-federal program. There is federal oversight, but indeed the state administers their own program. It's my understanding that this bill, Deputy Commissioner, I believe it's Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach said, it does modify what is considered a good cause for leaving employment. That's slightly different than what is in current UI statute. And so I think this just clarifies that DEED would also administer this new language that's in the bill.
Representative McDonald, I see Representative Wolgamott has his hand up, so we'll go to him. Representative Wolgamott.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach, for that. And Representative McDonald, I'll just say that, I'm more than willing to discuss this with you, this provision with you, possibly to remove it so as not to be redundant. I think this is something that we can continue to hash out as this makes its way throughout the committee process.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott. I certainly understand after doing this for 10 years, you know, you get the bill back from the revisers and you trust that it is doing what you want it to do. But federal law, from what I know and my sources, it is pretty clear as to it has to be a separate entity, so you could jeopardize that. But that's nor here nor there. You certainly will look into that and have some smarter people than I. Mr. Chair, if I may just ask one more, well, a couple of questions, but I'll just say one more at this time.
Please proceed, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, in your testifiers, and by the way, for those testifiers that are watching, I sincerely want to thank you for the good work that you do. You put food on the table. My family has always been very appreciative, and we thank the good Lord above for our meal every day and every meal. And we we know where it comes from. We know the hard work that it takes to get there. So thank you. But in many of the testifiers, almost all of them, they all stated that they are part of a safety team, a safety meeting, and that they regularly meet often in the meeting to talk over safety issues and health concerns of their employees. And then some mentioned that they will often go to the floor of the meatpacking plants and practice and run through safety measures. Now, that's due to the fact that a lot of these companies have very strict safety measures and guidelines within their plants. So I'm wondering why, since they all have these safety meetings, they all talked about how great it's been and that they've been there for many, many years. Why is your bill necessary when most of the companies, if not all, are currently doing all that they are doing right now to ensure the safety of their employees? Especially during this pandemic, the 6 feet distance, the shields, the masks, the washing, they're all doing that. Matter of fact, food processing plants, under the guidance of 11 different agencies in the state, already mandate and regulate how safety measures have to be done in these plants. So talk about duplicative. 11 different agencies oversee, from OSHA and DALI and DEED and WHO and the CDC, all oversee these plants, meat processing plants. And yet here's another thing. So why do you believe it's necessary with your bill, knowing that there's 11 other entities that oversee the quality, insurance, and safety of these plants, and the very testifiers saying that they have often safety meetings, why is your bill necessary then in doing so and codifying a law? As a matter of fact, if the unions aren't doing their job and ensuring the safety of its members, then I guess we should codify this into law. So just wonder what say you, Representative Wolgamott.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Not all shops have these safety teams. I want to make sure that every workplace at every shop throughout our state does have these teams put in place. But, Mr. Chair, if there are other testifiers, Mr. Lopez, or I see that Mr. Utek has his hand up, if there are other testifiers that would like to weigh in on this, I think that would be appropriate so we can give Representative McDonald a thorough answer.
Mr. Utek, please proceed.
Representative McDonald, I think I can speak to your comments around some testifiers today stating the fact that they're part of safety committees and they even go out onto the production floor to oversee and make sure things are moving along in a safe fashion. That is the case in two facilities that these workers come from, and the reason is those are unionized facilities. We have bargained those safety committees, that safety committee language into our contracts, and that's why they're out on those floors. What really keeps me up at night, Representative McDonald, are all the non-union plants in the state. There's over 10,000 non-union packing and manufacturing workers that do not have the luxury of a union to oversee and bargain on their behalf. And they literally do put life and limb on the line on a daily basis to put that food on your table and mine. And I hope that helps answer your thoughts around that. Not all plants have safety committees.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the testifier. To the point of the non-union shops that you speak of, I can only say this, unless you visited each and every one of them and reviewed their safety protocols, I am skeptical that you would know for certain that they don't practice safe protocols within their facilities and safety of all their employees. So I'll just have to say and end it at that at this point.
Thank you, Representative Donald. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions, and I'll make them very quick. I was not able to get from the testimony how many meatpacking employers there are. I've heard that there are over 10,000 workers. How many meatpacking employers are there in Minnesota?
Representative Wolgamott, do you have that answer?
Yes, if you'll give me just one second, Mr. Chair. There are roughly 45,000 meat processing workers in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Wolgamott, the question was how many employers are there?
I do not have that answer available, but I'd be more than happy to find it and follow up.
Representative Raleigh, we'll find that offline. Please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that drives to my actual question, which is 7.4 of the bill says that a certified professional ergonomist must be on the safety committee. And I'm just wondering how many certified professional ergonomists, or I don't know how to pronounce that word, ergonomists there are in Minnesota.
Representative Wolgamott.
I don't have that answer. Again, happy to follow offline, but just so members in the public know, ask the question, what are workplace ergonomics? Employers are responsible for providing a safe and helpful place for all employees. So by implementing ergonomic processes that can significantly reduce the risk of developing musculoskeletal disorders called MSDs and improve worker performance and productivity. So that's why we have that in that bill. But be more than happy to follow up offline and get you those specific numbers. Representative Raleigh.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that absolutely leads into my next question, which is found in 8.6. Do we have examples of ergonomic hazards that are not feasible to control, reduce, or eliminate?
Representative Wolgamott. Or to the testifiers.
Yeah, I would defer to Mr. Robert Lopez, the state legislative representative for UFCW, or the Department of Labor and Industry, or any of the testifiers to provide those examples.
I see Mr. Utek has his hand up. Can you answer that question, Mr. Utek?
Answer that question, no.
Okay. Is there somebody?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I think that was background noise.
Okay. That'll be another offline question that we're going to have to get for you, Representative Raleigh. Do you have further questions?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 12.11 says that an employer may provide all paid sick time up front, so either at the point of getting employment or at the beginning of the year. Do we know what the tax effects are going to be on an employer or an employee who, if the employer makes this assumed accrual and the employee leaves? And does that have to be looked at by the tax committee, Mr. Chair?
Representative Wolgamott.
I'd be more than willing to hash that aspect of it out in the tax committee. Absolutely.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Final question. I want to make sure I get his name right, Mr. Rod Reichs. Testify that he's got 46 years in the industry. He's been on a safety committee. And so I'd love to hear what in this bill will make the safety committee that he serves on better, and what is the safety committee not able to do because this bill hasn't been passed yet, Mr. Chair?
Representative Riley, thank you. And I think a lot of these examples are safety committees that are on that are unionized, and we're talking about all plants, both unionized and non-unionized plants. Mr. Reichs, please proceed.
Okay. What we need help with is holding these facilities accountable. Things seem to take a long time. Yes, we have very proactive safety committees. Yes, we are very preventative. But when it comes to actually getting things done and to the floor, it seems to be like it's a time game. And that's where we need to have the improvements. We need to be able to manage getting these safety issues and these concerns done in a timely manner, which is not happening in a lot of facilities throughout the country. You know, it's not just the unionized ones or the ones that don't have a union. It seems to be that it's a time constraint. It's a time issue when it comes to getting stuff done.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'm satisfied.
Representative Greenman.
Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank the testifiers. We make policy best when we root it in the lived experiences, and you all are the experts on your workplace. And so I want to share Representative McDonald's thank you. And I know that the best way to thank you is to make sure that we have policies that ensure that you can live and work and do your jobs and be able to speak up about it. And one of the things that struck me is how I think almost every one of you talked about part of this bill and part of what's important and part of what I think you guys have been working on for years, not just with this pandemic, is being able to speak up and be a part of making sure that you have safe workplaces. And so I'd love to hear about, and maybe it's from Representative Wagamont or from Dolly, but what current protections are there for whistleblowers, for folks who speak up about issues, safety issues in the workplace?
Representative Wagamont.
Mr. Chair, I would defer to Commissioner Blissabach.
Commissioner, please proceed. I apologize for not calling you Commissioner earlier.
Thank you, Chair Eklund and members of the committee. Currently in our OSHA laws in the state of Minnesota, there are protections for people who for workers who raise concerns about safety and health issues in the workplace, whether they raise those issues to the employer or to Minnesota OSHA. There are protections that prevent basically discrimination or adverse employment action in those situations.
Representative Greenwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you explain how this bill changes that or strengthens those?
Commissioner.
Many of the, Chair Eklund, members of the committee, many of the provisions in this bill build on the protections that are currently in law and build on them in a way specific to these types of facilities. The bill creates a workers' rights coordinator. That coordinator would be housed here at the Department of Labor and Industry with responsibilities of, you know, outreach and education, as well as some of the proactive work. The coordinator would have full access into the facilities. The coordinator would also be responsible for submitting a report each year to the legislature. And that includes recommendations on promoting better treatment of workers. So that is all outlined in the bill, but many of the protections that are in this bill build on protections that are currently in law specific to this type of industry.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that we're running short on time. I just couldn't help but note that I think it was Mr. Morgan referenced The Jungle, which I think many of us read in high school, but that was from the turn of the last century. And so as we think about, one, working together with the workers in these in this really dangerous industry, we should be focused on how we can protect workers. I am so grateful to you, Representative Wagamont, and to your testifiers. I think this is a really important issue that the pandemic did not create, but exposed some of the worst of it. So thank you so much.
Seeing no other member questions, I see we have two of the testifiers that have their hands raised, but we are running short on time. So if you want to submit your testimony in writing to the committee, you can. Representative Wagamont, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's tremendously important. And when we saw what happened last spring, it wasn't a plant in Minnesota, it was a plant in another state. When the salary employees were betting on when their employees were going to get sick from the COVID, that is disgusting. And thankfully, we have a lot of union plants in the state that take care of that type of thing. But it just sickened me to see that this was happening in the United States of America. Closing comments, Representative Waldwein.
Again, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, testifiers. Couldn't have said it better myself. What happened last spring was unacceptable, but this is about more than just COVID-19. All Minnesotans are going to be better off and more safe by increasing standards and training in our meat and poultry processing plants. This is about worker safety. This is about food safety. This is about safety for all of our communities and all of our district members. So no Minnesotan should have to choose between going into work and earning for their family and working in an unsafe environment. That's unacceptable. That's why, Mr. Chair and members, I urge your vote, and let's send this bill on to the next stop so that we can make sure that all of Minnesota's meat and poultry processing workers have the safe workplace that they deserve.
I will renew my motion that House File 800, as amended, be referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Yes.
Zhang, aye. Representative Detmer.
No.
Detmer, no. Representative McDonald.
No.
McDonald, no. Representative Berg.
Yes.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss.
No.
Bliss, no. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, no.
Poston, no. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, no.
Raleigh, no. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 8 ayes, 5 nays.
8 ayes and 5 nays. Representative Wolgemont, you and your bill are on your way to Ag Finance and Policy. Thank you. Members, we have our next meeting is Tuesday, March 9th, getting close to deadline. Any questions or comments? We're about a minute over. Representative Poston.
No, I'm sorry. I have no question.
Okay. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.